Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Power to Be You and Rise to Win for our youth movement listeners. I am Sandra Bueno, and I am your host for this show, and I come to you live from West Palm Beach, Florida. And the purpose of this show is to raise awareness, bring an awareness of responsibility and empowerment. And I have been featuring guests, leaders, visionaries, authors, nonprofit directors, individuals who are on a path to making a difference for themselves as well as in the lives of our youth. And today's guest is truly, truly a very special person that I have had the privilege of meeting a few weeks ago, actually a week ago, and he has touched my heart because through him I was really able to see just the opportunities as well as just the gift that my guest brings. And what I'd like to do is introduce you to him by reading a little bit about his background. He is actually 88 years of a youthful age, and he was born in Brooklyn in 1921. He is the oldest of five children, four boys and one girl. He is a strictly born and bred Brooklyn youth who went to Brooklyn Elementary School, Boys High, and Brooklyn College. Then he also continued on to Brooklyn Law School, where he continued on with practice in criminal law for 6 years, and then continued with civil practice for 41 years. So he was actually a lawyer for 47 years of his life. That's even longer than I have been alive. And he retired in 1997. Now, he is a resident of Florida, and he considered himself a snowbird up to a few years back, at which point he became a permanent resident in September of 2000. And he has been married to his beautiful wife, and her name is an incredibly beautiful name, Blossom, for the past, I believe it was 24 years, if I am not mistaken. And he comes to us as just a beacon of inspiration, motivation, empowerment, insight. And I am just gifted and honored to welcome Mr. Jack Bornstein on our platform. Jack, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Just like that, after I said all of this, he says thank
yes,
you because
yes,
he
yes.
brings so much. Well, I just have to tell you that it really is a gift to have met you and to have heard you speak. And, you know, I like to start off with, you know, you have so much to share. And I would like for you to start off with, you know, your experience with how you stood up a week ago at a volunteer breakfast at an elementary school where my son attends and where you have been volunteering for the past 9 years. And you, during this volunteer appreciation breakfast, you stood up, you went up to the mic, and you shared your story. Can you start with that?
Yes, I can. About 9 years ago, I started to do volunteer work in the Morrow County School. And I intended to be there for one day a week in the morning on a Monday, and I would volunteer on that basis. That first day, the first Monday I came to school, a teacher assigned me to one of the pupils and said, read to him, let him read to you, and see if he comprehends what he reads and what he's telling you. I spent two periods with this boy, and I remember his name, Evan Hunter. At the end of two periods, I brought him back to the classroom, and as I brought him back, the class was about to leave for lunch, and the children lined up, and the teacher and myself were standing near the door. Suddenly, Evan broke away from the line, didn't say a word, ran up to me, gave me a big hug, and then ran back to the line. Well, I was hooked. I couldn't just spend one day a week there. I started to spend five mornings a week for a number of years, and just recently I toned down a bit by going in only 4 days a week in the morning. And that's how my volunteer started with the Morrow County School.
Wow, that's an incredible story, because to me it's just, you know, here you went in because a friend of yours, a neighbor of yours, had his grandchildren there.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, he said, come with me one day, and here you entered, and here you were going to do one day, and all of a sudden, here you were given an opportunity. And what led you to taking on that opportunity, and you know, what does it mean to you? What has it given it to you?
I'm not a golfer. I was a tennis player, and I was athletic in a lot of sports, but not being a golfer, and I found my days were long here, and most of my immediate family were in New York. I have cousins here that made it pleasant, but not having my immediate family with me sort of made me, I didn't feel like I would belong here in Florida. So I thought the next best thing was to see if I can volunteer for something that I enjoyed. And I've always enjoyed children, their playthings, my own children, my own grandchildren. I have five of them. And I went to my neighbor who had two of his grandsons in the school. And I asked him about it, and he said, okay, when you become a permanent resident, come down and see me, which I did. And that's how I got into volunteering, and I loved every minute of it. The minute I walked into that building, no matter what my condition or mental attitude has been, I walk into that building and I meet the kids, and the way they greet you and smile, I felt as if I was uplifted, and that lasted until I left the school. And even if I left, I still felt that in a high. I was walking on air. And it's been that way for 9 years.
And you mentioned, when we were there last week, you mentioned how, you know, you mentioned about moving forward where you don't have to worry about where you're going, but you know you're going to be here for so many more years. How do you feel about that?
Well, I feel as if I found the fountain of youth here in Florida. I'm sure people of history remember Ponce de Leon, looking for the fountain of youth. Well, I found it here in Florida, unknowingly, and the fountain of youth is the kids. They're the future. I've always thought children are the future of our country, and what I have found, that I walk in every day to a classroom, and the kids' faces light up, and they give me a greeting, good morning, Grandpa, or good morning, Mr. B, and it's a reciprocal process. I give to them, and they give to me, and what I'm giving them is really a smile, a pat on the back, an encouraging word, and they give back to me tenfold.
And you know what? It's amazing, because I was actually in my son's school a few weeks ago. I had gone there to volunteer on one of the mornings, and you walked in, and you came in with your hat, and it was a hat from the military. There was, you know, as a veteran, and you know, and you came in, and you walked in, and you had this amazingly beautiful smile, and your just your joviality, your humor, just your, you know, your sense of light, and it's just radiance that just, you know, it just.
Well, I think it's an attitude. I was in the military. I was in service in the Army from February of 1942. I received a deferment because I was in college at that time. I actually went into service in December of 42, and I came out on January 22nd, 1946. A year and a half of that was spent overseas. I was in combat, and that changed a lot of my values. I came home realizing that there are certain things that are not as important as I thought. Although I did think that, I remember telling my mother and father that if I made $100 a week for the rest of my life, I'd be a rich man. Well, we know what happened to that thought. But it's just something that evolved, and it's attitude. I think it's attitude in a lot of things. And you have to have a positive attitude, and that's what I've tried to instill in my grandkids and in the children's school.
Well, how would you say then to people who right now, for example, parents who find themselves in circumstance and, you know, just everyone, I mean, everyone who's being impacted and, you know, as part of reality, I mean, here you lived through a period of time when, you know, or you were developing or you were growing up and you were finding your way through a period of time that was, you know, here you were in the war, here you, you know, a war that marked us all. I mean, here you were through the Great Depression, you know, here you went through the 70s, here you've been through all of these circumstances that have really created, and like you said, it, you know, it changed your values because you were exposed to something different. What would you say today?
I was very fortunate. I had a mother and father who, we were, I realize now, we were poor. We were middle income, but the low middle income. And my dad, if he brought him $50 or $75 a week from his business, it was a great deal. And no matter what, throughout the entire Depression, when things were really bad, and I only remember one thing. I was 13 years old. And I remember one thing, that there was a period of 3 days when we had nothing to eat. All we had was hard rolls, and we dipped them into hot tea to soften them up to eat. But that was the worst that I remember of the Depression. And I know it had to be worse for a lot of other people. But they never let us feel that we were poor. They always encouraged us. My dad always said, "I want you to go to college," to all of us. "I don't care if you want to be a truck driver, anything, but you're going to be the best educated truck driver on the road." And there came a time when my brother and myself wanted to leave just for a short period, for about 6 months, a year, to bring some money in. He said, "Nothing doing. If you start to earn money, you might not want to come back, because that dollar is a very powerful thing, and I don't want you to be overpowered by it." And that's the type of attitude that they had. And I've tried to fulfill this with my children, my grandchildren, the same way. Money is not the god. You use it for good purposes, for necessities, but not to become so greedy that just having money for its own sake is the important thing.
See, I would say that's something that, you know, it's funny because we will always put words, you know, that signify something. And like when you say, you know, you say positivity and what your father shared with you, you know.
Hello?
In essence, they are values. You know, in essence, they are values. In essence,
yes,
they are.
And I know how difficult it is, because I listen to children talk, and they tell me little things from which you gather or infer other things. Their parents, most of them, are two earners, husband and wife. They earn. They both have to go out to make a living. And unfortunately, too, I found a lot of kids, there are single families, single earners. Only the mother is earning money. And it's very difficult. Yet throughout that difficulty, I must say, I don't think it's as difficult now as it was during the Deep Depression, when people really did terrible things. A friend of mine, his father was a cashier in a bank for 20 years, couldn't find a job, walked into his bank and walked out the 15th store window. Others selling apples on the corners. Others were shoving snow into the open sewers away from the neighborhood because they didn't want other neighbors to see them doing that for 50 cents an hour. But yet, a family can make and instill certain values in their children that no matter how bad it is, it can be better. And if they strive, and especially if they earn an education, that's most important. My folks did that to us, and we've instilled it in our children, and I see the results with my grandchildren now. They are getting the best and most of education processes that they can.
Well, Jack, let me ask you, did your parents have an education?
My mother was educated here. She was a high school graduate, went to Eastern District in Brooklyn, and at the time she married, married girls could not stay in school, so she had to leave. Years later, when we were all set, married, etc., she went back to Erasmus High School and got her degree. And my father used to say, "My little graduate." He was foreign born. He came here, went to night school, learned English, and set up his own little business. He was a seltzerman. He delivered soda, seltzer, and beer to homes.
See, it's funny because listening to you is like Hillary Clinton wrote it, and it takes a village. She explains about her own upbringing with her father and the tradition and how they really instilled the values of, you know, you have to go to school.
Yes.
Because it seems that back then, you know, going to school was something that nobody could do, and you know, your children were going to be the first ones to be able to go. And today, you know, I mean, here we are in this country where youth are not continuing on with their school, where they are opting to drop out, you know, where, I mean, I spoke with one of the directors of a youth program where she said to me, the biggest worry that our middle school and high school kids are having is, am I going to be able to make it past high school? I mean, that's the agony.
I understand that there are many boys and girls that are not finishing high school. And certainly not going to college.
What do you think is the link? What do you think is that missing piece between what you experienced with your family and where we are now?
Well, when I was growing up, my mother stayed home and was the caretaker at home. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I believe, I know that of necessity, husband and wife may have to work. But yet time must be given to the children to encourage them. And that is what we received from my mother as a homemaker. She was always home. She was always there for us. And even though parents today cannot do that because of finances, they can still give time to their children. I see mothers in school. They're on their cell phones trying to speaking to some of their kids and trying to guide them from afar. It's difficult, but it can be done. But children have to know that the parents, no matter if they're working with latchkey kids, they must listen to their parents, because later on in years, they will realize how smart their parents really were. And I think the link has to be the parents. The link has to be a family. It's a family link.
I think you're very right, because I experienced it in my own life with my own child, where, I mean, he is so on cue and he recognizes when I'm not there. You know, he tells me. I mean, he says, you're, and I've seen it, and I see myself, because I'm so involved with, you know, supporting youth, and I see myself as a mom. Okay, these are the problems and these are the issues that we in our generation are experiencing. And like you mentioned, you know, I mean, transitional generations and, you know, what's available to me as a woman today is so different than what was available 60 years ago, you know, and in one way it's great, but in another way it lures me to, or lures us here, especially in America, to say, oh my God, I can be this, I can be that, I can win, I can get this much money, I can be someone, you know, who has a lot of power, or I can make a big difference. But, you know, to be with our kids and be there for them all the time, it becomes a play of, you know, how do you balance? How do you,
it's so difficult here. The times are so different than when I was a child. But yet I admire the women today. Even then I admire, because some of my family, even those years, had to go out and work. And especially today when you must work practically. And it's women especially, they have to give so much, they have to be so many things to they have to be a husband, wives, mothers, caretakers to some of their parents now. It's a whole new world. So I'm in awe of women. and I do have as I told you, I was married twice. I'm married the second time for 33 years. My first marriage is 24 years, and
okay.
I happen to have a wonderful wife who understands me, criticizes me, but nevertheless, she backs me 100%.
So would you say that's another, see, you have, here with you, with 88 years young, here you have, you know, experiences that transcend time, but at the end of the day, you know, you just mentioned something, you said, I have a wife who loves me, criticizes me, and I'm like, okay, well, that's familiar. You know, at the end of the day, we try to remove ourselves away from and move ourselves away from tradition, but we realize more and more that, you know, those people who are successful or who find balance or who have great marriages, you know, it hasn't been easy, but it's always been guided by some element of, you know, I would say tradition, you know, history, because history does repeat itself.
Yes,
so,
it does.
You know, what...
The only thing I can share is be yourself, try to get the best possible education, do listen to your parents and your grandparents because they have things to say. Look, just because we're old doesn't mean we're smart, but there are nuggets among older people that can be passed down to younger people only because they've had the experience. They've experienced certain things younger people haven't experienced yet. And if younger people are listening, they can pluck out these words of wisdom or care or what to watch out for. That's all I can say. In other words, you have to be on the lookout. You have to be on the alert yourself. You can't just depend on somebody else for help or anything. You have to have an independent thinking mind, and you must not be afraid of failing at something. God knows I failed a number of things, made wrong decisions and all that, but I try to learn from them. If I didn't learn, that was my fault. But I did learn, and as a result, I'm living 88 years. I feel good about myself. I feel good about the people I'm seeing, I'm trying to help. And as I said before, they give me back more than I give them. And I love it.
Yeah, that's great because you just said it. And those few words that you just shared, it's really the, like you said, the golden nuggets of the wisdom. You know, you mentioned you must not be afraid of failing. And that, I believe, is the one error our generation has made where you tell, you know, you're always coming and interceding and on behalf of someone and saying, look, you know, if you go down that route, you're going to get hurt or this is going to happen to you or, you know, and it prevents you from being curious and it prevents you from putting yourself out there and trying and seeing what you're made of, you know, and we don't have that.
I know that a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people say this, it's a gimme generation, the new generation, gimme, and material things. Yes, they're it's true, but I look at my own grandkids, and I see the way they're growing up and the way they're maturing. They listen to me. When I say listen to me, not in everything, but occasionally when we get together, because I only see you maybe 2-3 times a year, we sit down, we discuss things. The youngest is now 15, the oldest is 20. And I'm able to talk to them in a way that I couldn't talk to them 5-10 years ago. And we start to talk about things, and I hate to sermonize, but we're talking about general things. It could be anything. And suddenly we'll start talking about something that happened years ago, and they'll ask me, how was it then? And what should I look out for, or should I be careful? And that's how we get into topics that I can sort of put my head on their shoulders and hope that they'll listen to my words and be able to use them in their future lives.
See, you just said you made me feel something while you were saying that, which is that trust that one can actually have when one speaks
yes.
to a person who has that
yes.
experience, and where you realize, you know what, this person is not going to hurt me because they've already been through it and they have nothing to get from me.
Right. And Sandra, you know, you just said something. My feelings for the children in the classroom. Many of the kids, I come into a classroom and they run to me and give me a hug. I get the feeling that some of these kids, they lack that perhaps in their own homes. They don't get the idea of a hug from a parent or so, or maybe not enough hugs. Who knows? And I love when they run up to me and hug. Not all the kids do that. Only some of them. And I get hugs from teachers, too, so it's pretty nice. I like it.
You share it. It comes out through your voice because it's, you know, and just to see a child do that, and I think, and I believe you are right because I've been in there myself where, you know, it's one thing. I think a child completely knows when you're not paying attention, and a child
yes.
knows feel.
They say a child and animals know when you're being nice to them and when you're really sincere. I just hope that they have that feeling about me, and they grow up thinking, well, I wonder how Mr. B would have done this or said this to me. It's that kind of a thought.
See, Mr. B, I think this is the beginning of you creating something like that, or us creating, you know, wonder how Mr. B would have seen it. Remember Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Remember Mr. Rogers? That was for our time. Yeah. But now is the new generation. So, you know, here's a new generation of snowbirds who are now getting engaged and doing, you know, new things. And I will tell you, a year ago or 2 years ago, I went actually to Panera Bread. Or it was one of these Einstein bagels. And I went in there and I spoke with a couple of the people who were there. You know, and they're the regulars that come every morning. They buy their coffee, right. They get their newspaper, and they chat for a long time, and then they leave. Well, I remember speaking to two men, and I said to them, I go, excuse me, would you want to share your golden nuggets? Would you want to share what you've done and how you've done it and, you know, and speak to youth? And immediately they were like, no, they have their own parents. We're over it. We want to just be here and just relax. You know? And I said, what a shame, because this is an opportunity for, you know, people who have been through it to come and encourage and to give and to love. And I'm not saying give. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, 2 weeks or 9 years. It could be once a week, you know, 1 hour. Any interaction, I believe, you know, a person can have with a younger person can be that thing that will make the difference. Like you said, a child can say, I wonder how Mr. B would have answered this, or how would he have done this, you know?
Yes. It's.
And you might just be that one person that makes a difference.
Well, that's it. My younger brother was an attorney also, and in his last 20 years, he became a teacher, an adjunct professor. And he said, you know, Jack, it's such a pleasure teaching, because 10 years after I started to teach, I used to get former students that came back to me and said, you know, Mr. B, I became a lawyer because of what you said, what you taught me, what you told me about the law. Others said, I never forgot what you told me because it helped me in business. Or, you were my teacher in law school, and I enjoyed your classes. You know, if you leave a memory like that, it's so satisfying. And my brother was taken by it. He loved that. The idea that he felt he was helping somebody. And that's what I hope everyone does in their lives, if they can at least help one person. My God, do you realize how many nice people we'd have? And we do have a lot of nice people, but the papers never play that up. They always play up the bad things, the sensational items. That's what sells papers.
It is, and I'll tell you, but you evoke that selflessness and that zest for life.
Well, I do. I do have a zest for life. At any age, I have no choice. Thank God I'm in fairly good health, and I enjoy things around me. In other words, I'm smelling the roses now, and I've been doing that for the last 10 years. Sandra? Hello?